T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You guys have heard me talk about Red Door Grill for almost a year now on 610 Sports Radio, and they're the proud sponsor of the Bobcast. And I'll tell you what, I'm a proud eater at Red Door Grill. In fact, my family and I love going to Red Door Grill, not just on Mondays for burgers or Thursdays for fried chicken, but just about every single day of the week. Because every time we walk into a Red Door Grill location, we're walking out of there feeling satisfied, feeling great, and knowing we got some of the best food in Kansas City. $5 burgers on Monday is where the week starts. You're not going to find a better deal than that. The best burger in town for just $5. You want some fries, it'll cost you a buck more. And then on Thursday, we have the jalapeno dipped fried chicken. That fried chicken starts marinating on Monday. It marinates on Tuesday. It marinates on Wednesday. It's got the herbs and spices to get into that chicken. And then boom, they flash fry it on Thursday to give you the best fried chicken that you'll ever have. And then of course, happy hour every weekday, Monday through Friday from 3 to 6. That's where we cash in sometimes on Fridays as well. Enjoy those great drinks. Enjoy the great appetizer specials from 3 to 6 every single weekday at Red Door Grill. And with 3 locations, there's one close to everybody. 159th in Antioch, 119th and Row in Town Center Plaza in Leawood and Camelot Court. And of course, you can find the location in Brookside as well. It's Red Door Grill. Back in November, UMKC was looking for a new athletics director, and they focused their attention to Brandon Martin. Brandon Martin comes with a lot of experience out in California and also at the University of Oklahoma. In his short time at UMKC, he's already raised well over $1 million and has huge plans for the athletic department as a whole and not just the men's collegiate basketball team. Under the leadership of Brandon Martin, UMKC is poised to make some great strides and strides they've never made before. Here's my conversation with UMKC Athletics Director, Dr. Brandon Martin. I can honestly say sitting here today is the first time, and I've been in Kansas City basically since 2001, had a 3-year stint in St. Louis, which is a very unfortunate time of my life, but I can honestly say this is the first time that I've been excited about UMKC Athletics, and I'm a big Rich Zavosik fan, was excited when he was here as the head coach, but sitting across from you today, Dr. Martin, and hearing about everything that you guys are trying to do and will accomplish at UMKC, as just a Kansas City resident that went to KU, I'm stoked for you guys right now. You got the juices flowing in me. Do you feel that from everybody else in the
city? I do. Yeah, I do. And that was one of our primary goals, is to get interest, to get people to pay attention to some of the things that we were trying to get done at UMKC. And regardless of anywhere in the city, anywhere in the region, people are talking about UMKC athletics, and some are more educated than others, but this is a great time to be a Roo. Great time to be a Roo, and we've had some early wins in the first 5 months of my tenure, but we plan to, you know, leave an indelible mark on this city, and I'm so happy to be here. I've really grown to love the city and have a love affair with just what it presents. The people have been fantastic. They've been so embracing, so authentic. And you know, I don't deal with traffic every day. Yeah. I mean, so coming from L.A., it's been great. It's been great. Not to, my commute from the north is, you know, 18 minutes away to campus, and that's refreshing. And opportunity at UMKC, working for and with Chancellor Agarwal, working for and with Provost Barb Bickelmeyer and the other cabinet members, my peers, has just been a tremendous opportunity. And we understand we have a ton of heavy lifting to do left to elevate our athletics program, but it's just been a delight to be here.
When you first got that phone call from whoever it was, 816 area code, maybe it was a Mike Alden 573 or something, you're looking at it and going, UMKC? I don't know anything about that. What was your initial thought when UMKC came calling?
Well, let's just say you mentioned Mike Alden. Yeah. Let's just talk about him for a minute. I mean, you talk about a first class individual, a person who has, been a pillar of our profession for a number of different years. What he did at Mizzou was nothing short of extraordinary. And so getting a call from Mike Alden, it's like E.F. Hutton, people listen. You have to take that call. You have to listen. And, we had our conversation for the first time was 45 minutes, and he gave me an overview of the opportunity. And it was something that was intriguing at the time, and it was something that I wanted to explore.
And I'm sure he probably, with his relationship with Joe Castiglione, when you work for Joe at Oklahoma, Joe's probably like, you got to get Brandon Martin in there at UMKC. I mean, it's funny how everything is just kind of connected. Yeah. No matter what walk of life you're in, it's all about who you know and those connections.
Absolutely. And just to talk about Joe just for a quick minute, making the transition from USC back in 2010, I worked for Joe for 3 years, up to 13, and it was one of the best experiences professionally in my life. I had to make a change from a big city, Los Angeles, to Norman, Oklahoma, and it was a great family place for me, my wife, and my kids, but Joe showed me a different way to do business. He showed me how to work with how to manage stakeholding groups, how to fundraise money, and just gave me just that prudent, timely advice on a daily basis. And so, having him as a mentor, having him as a guide and a director is just tremendous. So you team Joe and Mike and them coming together and figuring out who is the ideal person for this position. And I think they came up with me.
And you're a guy who's no stranger to raising money. I mean, your first 100 days as the AD at Cal State Northridge, you raised $1 million. You've already, at UMKC in 5 months, got $1.5 million renovation project going on to the gymnasium and all that. How have you been able to hit the ground running and raise that kind of money almost overnight?
Yeah, well, it's just a matter of just trying to prioritize what's important. The impression of UMKC athletics for some time now, has been not the best. And especially when you compare it to KU, you compare it to Mizzou, you compare it to K-State. And so one of the things that I knew that was extremely important was for me to get off the ground and be able to prove that I could raise money. But it's not so much about people writing checks. It's about the engagement. The Sunderland Foundation gave us a very sizable gift, and we're extremely thankful for that. But it's more than that. It's about getting the Sunderland Foundation engaged in what we're doing. Coming to our games, buying Ru apparel, coming to our courtside club, actually meeting our student athletes, meeting our staff. It's about that engagement, and that's critical. And it's not just, the Sunderlands. It's we want to get the larger Kansas City region engaged in what we're doing. And so that kind of, leads into our Ru Athletic Fund. We started our Ru Athletic Fund almost 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And
I can't believe that didn't exist before. Like, I thought I was reading something the other day. Like, well, this hasn't existed before.
Yeah, yeah. There was sort of a version of it. It was the Ru Scholarship Fund, but it wasn't as robust as the one that we've created. And since we've created it 6-7 weeks ago, we've actually acquired about 90 additional donors. And so there's sort of a a range of how people can get engaged financially from $50 all the way up to $5,000+. And, you know, people sort of make the donation of where they're comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so once we begin to improve our product and start to get people excited about our brand, hopefully we take that, you know, 500 donor up to 1,000 and 1,000 donor up to 5,000. And there's so many things that we want to get done. And, you know, we just got to get people engaged.
You mentioned the engagement. And I actually have that written down as something I want to talk to you about, because I think that's one of the things that has lacked at UMKC for over the years is engaging the community and getting just Kansas Cityans involved in UMKC.
Yeah.
How do you connect with KC and engage the city?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I did successfully at Cal State Northridge was, you know, I met with 100 donors in 100 days. And, you know, almost checked myself in the hospital doing that, you know, in terms of, because that's pretty ambitious. Mm-hmm. But it resulted in $1 million in fundraising. And here it's been sort of, you know, multi-pronged. One, you know, I've really made a point to meet with our existing donors, you know, to make sure that they're retained. That's one. Number two, we have to cast our net out to try and recruit more donors, because we have to recruit our base. You know, that's extremely important. The other one is you know, there's a woman in my department, Jessica Dixon, who, you know, I sort of changed her role into associate AD for community affairs and relations. And she's really been out in the community, really teeing me up for meetings, and not just for money, but just to see if there's any synergies that we can have with, you know, for example, the you know, Kansas City Royals, you know, or the Youth Academy, you know, or maybe it's J.E. Dunn. Maybe it's, you know, whoever it is, you know, we just want to have a seat at the table so that I have an opportunity to talk about the vision, our strategic objectives, and where we want to take the overall department.
So what is your vision for UMKC? Because yeah. I think ultimately you're judged on men's basketball. I mean, that's what people are going to judge mm-hmm. you on. Men's basketball is going to be the kind of the bell cow
sure.
of all this, what people
sure.
care about the most. So what is your vision for UMKC?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's just start with men's basketball. I mean, you know, we're off to a good start with Billy Donlin.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought it was Billy Donovan, yeah. and people were very excited yeah. you got a professional
yeah.
coach.
Yeah, it was, in my opinion, it was a very sophisticated hire. And so Billy is the right person for us at the right time. He's brought a level of pedigree, enthusiasm, passion, and results in a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And so we're extremely excited about him. We've made the move from Muni back to campus, which has been fantastic, because we want to get our students, we want to get the faculty, we want to get folks on campus engaged primarily. But I've always thought that, you know, if we really extend this out to a 10-mile radius outside of campus and just really focus on that, you know, we don't have to get everybody in the region, because we understand we have competition with KU. But if we can get all of the alums, you know, we have 68, you know, percent of the alums who live in the region. If we can get them engaged and involved in what we're trying to do and get them to some games, mm-hmm. but not only get them to games. When they come to the games, we want them to buy apparel. And when they buy apparel, we want them to buy some popcorn and maybe some chicken or a hot dog or whatever it is. We want to have one of the best fan experiences in the region. And we understand that's difficult. You know, we're not at the point of where Sporting is, and they've come a long way,
sure.
you know, but that's really one of the models that we want to follow. And I've met with some of their leadership team and you know, I definitely want to, you know, have them on board as we build out sort of our fan engagement, you know, effort, our fan engagement committee, and bringing them involved, especially in the sport of soccer, I think is just a prudent thing to do.
You mentioned Billy Donlan is the right guy at the right time for you guys. What made him the guy for your program?
His basketball acumen, his passion, his knowledge about Kansas City, his respect for our fans, the fact that he's been a head coach before at Wright State and proven over the 6 years that he was there, the fact that he has an understanding on how to get it done at a place with not as many resources as KU. You know, but he's highly competitive. He's put together a great team of coaches, and he's a guy who's a worker, and it really matches Kansas City. And one of my goals was to build a team that matches Kansas City, you know, hardworking, blue collar, you know, courageous. And when our fans come to a game in Swinney, we want them to see an up-tempo team, but a tough team. A tough team, but a tough team that's really playing for the pride of the city, not just the basketball program.
You had the opportunity to obviously be part of the team that hired Lon Kruger. You work with Tim Floyd at USC. You've been around some really good basketball coaches.
Yeah.
I want to know what the recruitment process was like for Lon Kruger at OU. How did you decide to, you know, go after him and get him to take the job there?
Yeah, well, you know, it was a collaborative effort, and that was back, of course, Joe was heavily involved in that. And President Bourne was heavily involved in that. But, you know, one of the things that Joe, as the basketball sport oversight administrator, he leaned on me to provide him with a list of prospective coaches who were the right fit and who's better than Lon Kruger for OU. Mm-hmm. And he has a CEO mentality, and that's how he runs his, not only his program, but his organization. You know, I call his program an organization. Because he's the consummate CEO, and he's so positive, he's so family oriented, and I learned a ton, you know, from Lon, and so he's the best.
Can you get him here to UMKC?
I don't know if I'm that good to get him here at UMKC. I don't know. I think he has a pretty good thing going with Joe at OU. But I feel really good about Billy and what the future holds for our men's basketball program.
It's tough, man, especially in the league that you're in. And I've been advocating this for a long, long time. Nobody listens to me. But,
yeah,
like, get into the Valley, man. Get into a league that's here that makes sense for UMKC.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, me being, 5, maybe 6 months on the job, you know, I've had to do a critical assessment and evaluation of what's the best league for us. You know, we've been in the WAC, and Jeff Hurd, the commissioner, has been, you know, he's a great guy, and he's done some great things for the league. But for us right now, you know, we do need to really take a close look at, you know, where we want to go and what's the proper roadmap for that, right? Mm-hmm. So the Missouri Valley, yeah, it's a desirable league. Are we prepared for that today? Probably not. But can we get there? We can, certainly. But there's some things that we need to do, not only as a department, but as a university, as a cabinet, with the chancellor and the provost, to figure out what's the best way that we can get, you know, to a conference like the Missouri Valley. And it takes time, you know, because a lot of it comes down to budgets. A lot of it comes down to revenue. A lot of it comes down to television exposure, especially as you talk about, you know, men's and women's basketball. Mm-hmm. A lot of it comes down to travel, you know, and that's one of the things that we're challenged with in the WAC. You know, we travel from Kansas City all the way to Seattle, you know, Seattle all the way down to Bakersfield, you know, all the way from Bakersfield to Texas. And so, you know, there's some things that we need to figure out fairly quickly to get us to the next level.
Yeah, it seems like it just would be a better fit. And I know for years people would always just say, well, they need to get a baseball program or something to get into mm-hmm. the Valley. But with the way that college athletics has changed over the last about decade now, it seems like now's the right time, like, for the Valley to grab Kansas City and add it to that footprint that they mm-hmm. already have out there, that strong mm-hmm. footprint. And from a basketball standpoint, like a men's basketball standpoint, if you were to make that jump to the Valley, what would you still have to do for that men's basketball program to say you're Valley ready?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is facilities. You know, we would have to make a decision if we're going to play at one of the existing places in downtown. Mm-hmm. You know, we played at Muni, but we would have to develop a plan for that. The other one is, you know, budget-wise, you know, we would need to really elevate our game there and do some more fundraising. You know, I think hiring Billy was really a statement, you know, to a conference like that to say, wow, these guys are headed in the right direction. You know, but I think it's really going to come down to facilities. It's going to come down to budget. You know, you mentioned baseball earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball is really big in the Valley. And not to say that we can start a baseball team tomorrow, you know, but, you know, we're definitely committed to being in the right conference that's going to give Kansas City, UMKC athletics the best, position to be exposed. That's what we're working towards.
You mentioned the television stuff, and everybody's about the TV dollars and the TV eyes and all of that. You started a network at Cal State Northridge for your program out there. Is that something that you're going to consider doing here?
Yeah. You know, and there's so – yeah, we had the CSUN Sports Network, and that was very cutting edge, especially for the Big West Conference, for Northridge. But, you know, being a mid-major school, there's a level of funding that you have to go out and secure. But also you have to get the right people to be able to execute the things that you want mm-hmm. in that network. I would love to have a robust, you know, RUE athletic network. And, you know, that's to be determined. You know, there's some other things that we have on our list that are priority right now. You know, I've been handed a pretty hefty list of things that I have to do. But at some point, we'll attack that.
What is, like, number one on that list? When you came in and your first day on the job and the boss goes, all right, this is what you need to get done. What is their goal and their vision for you as athletic?
Yeah, I think it's sort of multifaceted. You know, I think it's there's a ton of things that we need to do to build a foundation. And, you know, the first thing is we had to get a mission statement, you know, just fundamental things, a mission statement. And I think you've seen the RUE promise, you know, with our core values. We had to let Kansas City know what we stand for, you know, and what we don't stand for. And to identify with the core values and to make sure that our staff were making decisions, you know, under the guise of those core values. That was number one. Number two, it was we had to take a close look at how we were spending our money. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with the conference that we're in right now mm-hmm. and with team travel and things like that. And because we're in this business to make the best decisions for our student athletes. And so, you know, if our student athletes are spending more time on an airplane than they are, you know, in class, that's problematic. So we had to really do, you know, an assessment there. And then three, you know, As you see, I made a change in men's basketball. That's our flagship sport, men's and women's basketball. And you know, I felt that it was best that we bring in a person with more experience, a person with new energy, new ideas, to make a commitment to, you know, build that fence around the city that I've been talking about since I've been hired. I felt like that was important. Four is, you know, we need to elevate our facilities. And, you know, we made that commitment, thanks to the Sunderland Foundation. You know, we're going to start the phase one of that. Hopefully the phase two will start, you know, the latter part of this fall, early spring. But there's a lot of things that we need to do, from a facility standpoint. And so, you know, those are the four things, in addition to making sure that we had the proper team in place, especially on the external relations side. Mm-hmm. And we've secured that. And I feel really good about the job that Kurt JC has done. He and I worked together at Cal State Northridge, and he's built a fantastic young team. And, you know, we're only going to get better.
The background that you have, I think, is pretty impressive, and people are probably thinking, all right, where'd this guy come from? Mm-hmm. You know, he's an outsider. He's coming in. What does he know about this? But you've accomplished a lot. You played at USC in the early to mid-90s, and you're the best player on that team. That's me saying that, not you saying that. You know, you've played overseas. You've gotten all kinds of awards. I mean, so many different things on your resume that says, yes, this is the guy that is qualified mm-hmm. to be this job. Mm-hmm. Let's start with playing at USC in the early to mid-90s. What's your most memorable college moment?
Most memorable college moment. We had so many memorable moments during that period, but I just want to focus on George Raveling. George Raveling impacted my life tremendously. George Raveling was the first, I would say, intellectual that I have been around. I mean, he out-recruited, you know, everyone who was in the hunt for me to sign. He spent some quality time with me talking about more than just men's basketball. But George was a big reader. George actually issued out books, articles, lectures, recorded lectures. And George was he was an intellectual. He was a Renaissance man. And so that was one of my first guides. He was one of the first models that I had and said, hey, you know, I want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. I want to be that guy. I want to play basketball, but I want to be that guy. And so, you know, I'm a big reader. You know, I try and read 24 books a year. And a lot of that came from George at 17, 18 years old as a kid growing up in inner city LA and seeing the impact of reading that George had really, you know, really prioritize with the team, what it did for us. That's where that comes from.
What was your childhood like?
Childhood, you know, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I was primarily raised by my father, who worked for the LA Times and the transportation unit, first generation. My dad drove a truck, and he drove down a 110 freeway every night and looked to the left, and he saw USC. And had a dream for his son to attend the university. He didn't know how. He didn't know how, but he did know that I had a, you know, athletic gift, and my gift to him was signing with USC.
So how much did that factor into where you decided to go to college? I mean, if you were recruited by other places, how much of that was dad saying, this is my dream and I want to live, you know,
well,
my dad out here?
Well, you know, my dad is my, you know, he's my best friend, and you know, we've sort of been through a lot of peaks and valleys, and I knew that was his dream. But it wasn't just that. It was USC. I mean, USC at the time still was one of the best universities in the world. Playing for a coach like George Raveling was critically important. I wanted to attend a university that would make me a better man, a better person, a better spouse, and a richer man when I was 40, 45, and 50. And that's what USC did for me. And so it was a lot bigger than just saying, hey, I'm going to get the most playing time at Cal, Arizona. It was about legacy. And it was about, you know, at the age that I am now, being able to provide for my kids and what university could position me in that way.
You said you were raised primarily by your dad. What mm-hmm. happened with your mom?
My mom actually was here this weekend. Their flight is at 1:45. My parents were divorced when I was 8 years old, and they got back together after 28 years of being divorced.
Wow.
I know it's a rare story, but they have the best relationship now, and it's been really good for my own kids. And I'm thankful for them. They mm-hmm. they came out along with my Aunt Jimmy and really experienced the city and got a sense of it. And, yeah, it's been really good.
People hear South Central LA and they think, oh, no, that's rough and tough and whatnot. What was the childhood like growing up in South Central LA?
Yeah, I can speak to what it was when I was growing up there. You know, it was a gang-infested environment. It was a drug-infested place. It was a place with a ton of deplorable schools. But you know what? Instead of really focusing on that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to make a choice at an early age that you want something better. And I was always a good student. And clearly I was blessed with a gift to play basketball. And so at an early age, you know, I made a decision that I wanted to do something that was different, that I wanted to excel beyond my environment.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, but I knew that I was one of the you know, I knew that God had chosen me to be one of the leaders to step out so that I can go back in and really pull up the masses and really give young kids hope that they can be me. And that's really one of the things that I want to do here in Kansas City. So my role is to raise money, to win basketball games and all the things we've discussed. But I also firmly believe that my role is to provide hope for, you know, there was a kid just like me at, you know, 12, 13 years old that just needs to see me and say, I want to be him.
Mm-hmm.
Might not clearly understand what it is I do, but they can look at me and say, hey, you know, maybe if I have a conversation with him, you know, I can be him one day. And being me, maybe it's not an athletics director. Maybe it's a professor. Maybe it's a teacher. Maybe it's something professional, you know, whatever the case may be. But that's really important to me.
You also then went over and played in China and Venezuela, you know, professional basketball. How was that? And was that fun, or was that like, just
yeah,
like, wow, oh my
gosh. It was a rebirth. My first stop was Beijing, China, and you know, that was interesting. At the time, IMG was the league sponsor as well as Nike. I had four national team members on my team. One was Ma Jian, who had played over for Rick Majerus at the University of Utah. He was sort of like the Michael Jordan of China. Great experience. Some rowdy crowds over there. Met a ton of American students, you know, from Beijing University. It was tremendous. It was tremendous. I grew a lot. I grew a lot there. Played in Venezuela. Great opportunity. You know, it was different personnel, higher stakes, higher demands. I mean, mm-hmm. we played Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
No.
Practiced twice a day, didn't have many breaks, but, you know, we were paid well. You know, that was a different experience. In Spain, you know, I didn't spend as much time in Spain as the two previous countries, but, you know, what place is better than Spain? You know, they have the best wine. They have, you know, the league is great. The lifestyle is very slow paced. You know, it's European. So, you know, they really, live life, you know, unlike we do,
right?
You know, in here in America, all we do is work, you know, and pay bills and that kind of thing. They really have an appreciation for life. And so if you combine all three of those experiences, it really gave me a different view and a different perspective as I entered graduate school, as I entered the professional workforce, you know, after my professional career was over.
You regret not playing longer?
No.
You were done.
I had a goal. I had a ton of buddies who had played until they were 30, and they made, you know, a considerable amount of money. But I didn't want to be 30 years old starting a career with no skills, right? And I wanted to make some tax-free money, mm-hmm. and I wanted to invest it, and I wanted to go back to grad school because I knew my calling was more than just playing professional basketball, which was fantastic, you know, don't get me wrong. But I knew that my calling was more, and that more is being here in Kansas City right now.
I think one of the coolest things about you, and I told you earlier it was a goosebump type of moment, is when you find out you were voted as one of the top 100 most influential African-Americans in all of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is unbelievable. Not athletics or anything like that. In all of Los Angeles, you were ranked as one of the top 100 influential African-Americans. What does that mean to you?
When I received the call, I was in disbelief, and it really confirms what God has me here to do, and using athletics and sports as a platform to really have a reach out into the community, you know, and we're speaking of Los Angeles with this award, you know, as a mentor, as a guide, as a teacher, as a influencer, just to engender change in the city, and to be a leader. And so that award there is very close to my heart because it wasn't, you know, hey, you know, you averaged 31 points a game in high school, or hey, you got this basketball award, you're, you know, one of the 1,000-point scorers at USC. That one there really was separate, and is something that I'm really proud of, and something that I hope to continue here in Kansas City.
I asked you the coolest story from when you were playing college basketball, but just from your career, what's the best story that you have that you love to tell? Maybe you made a difference in somebody's life, or maybe you saved a kid from going the wrong direction or something like that. Do you have one of those stories that you look back on and you're like, I am so proud of this moment?
When I played, or just period?
Just period.
Oh, well, one that stands out is I'm at USC. I'm a assistant athletics director. It had to be 2002 2003. Lindell White was in the backfield with Reggie Bush. Lindell was from Denver, Colorado. It was definitely a cultural change for him, and he came into my office and said, hey, I wasn't Dr. Martin at the time. He said, hey, you know, Miss Martin, I want to leave. I want to go home. And I spent 45 minutes with him and really talked about the benefits of being here and how it could change his life, and talked to him about perseverance. I talked to him about discipline. I talked to him about not making excuses. I really had him reflect on the people, you know, in Denver who had made those excuses and how things didn't work out for them. And so I gave him a lecture for about 90 minutes, and he decided to stay. And that paid dividends for his career. Clearly, you know, he had a career in the NFL, and, you know, he's a good man, you know, as of this day. So that's one that I can clearly point out.
When you look back on your tenure at UMKC, what do you want people to say about the Dr. Brandon Martin tenure at UMKC?
One, that he cared about the city. He cared about the student athletes. He respected the values of the city. He came here and left an indelible mark on the athletics department, but also the university. And he elevated us to a point to where we are not only respected locally, but respected on a national level.
As you can see, the goals of the UMKC athletics department are very, very high. And with a leader like Brandon Martin at the helm, there's no reason the UMKC Kangaroos can't reach those great heights.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.